3, 2, 1.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is State Senator Tim Carty. I want to thank you for calling into this telephone town hall. I know the past few weeks have been hard on all of us, but I'm so proud of our community for staying safe and looking out for each other during this pandemic. Today, I'm joined by a number of guests who will share important information and resources and who will try to answer your questions. On the line, we have Olivia Thorne from the League of Women Voters. We have Jean Kasner from the Chester County Health Department. And, of course, Chester County Health Department is taking care of Delaware County right now. And Catherine Biddle from the Delaware County Library System. We also have my Chief of Staff, Sarah McCullough, and our Constituent Services Director, Dawn Martin, with us to answer questions around unemployment compensation. If you'd like to ask a question at any time, just press *3 on your phone. And with that, we're going to turn this over to Olivia Thorne from the League of Women Voters to talk about absentee ballots and voting. Olivia?
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for inviting me. When Act 77 was passed and signed into law last fall, mail-in, no-excuse ballots were added to our voting options. And this gives voters an easy, safe way to vote this June and going forward. Voters can now apply online for a mail-in or ballot application or print out an application form for an absentee ballot using the state website, and that's votespa.com, or some people like to call it votespa.com, so you remember the S. Hopefully before the election, our county election bureaus will be open again, where you'll be able to pick up and get a mail-in ballot application in person, fill out your application, and even pick up your ballot at that time. But for now, votespa.com is your only option. You don't need to apply for an absentee ballot when you have to explain why you couldn't be at the polls that day to vote. Absentee ballots still exist mostly because they're mentioned in the Pennsylvania Constitution, but a mail-in ballot can be used by any registered voter in Pennsylvania. The mail-in ballot application is simple to fill out. All you need to give is your name, your address, a PennDOT or driver's license ID, or the last four digits of your Social Security number to match up with what's in the database and the registration to proving you're a voter, you're eligible to vote. You could even request having a ballot sent to you for the November 2020 election. If you fill out the form online, you're going to be asked three questions prior to being given the application to fill out. They're going to ask if you're in the military, overseas, absent from your municipality, or have an illness or physical disability. The answer to all those is no, and then you're allowed to fill out the form. You'll receive a notice that your application has been completed, and you'll receive another email saying your application has been accepted once the application has been entered in the Department of State's SURE database. Because of the large number of applications, though, I can tell you it can take 2+ weeks, so it's important to apply now. The official deadline for applying for a mail-in ballot is Tuesday, May 26th, 1 week before the election. But you'll need to apply at the County Election Bureau in person if it's just before the deadline, as it takes several days for your application to get to the County Government Center via mail and for you to receive a mail about to receive your ballot and mail it back in. And I should note that if you decide your mail-in ballot ballot application rather than do it online, you will not receive a notice that your application has been received. Instead, you'll just receive a ballot in the mail for you to fill out and vote and then send back. Again, the number of ballots is large, and it could take a week or more to enter your application in the SURE database, even doing it locally within the county. So applying sooner than later is really advisable. And this year, because of the coronavirus and the uncertainty of what June 2nd will bring, a mail-in ballot is another perfect way to make sure you can vote and have your voice heard on Election Day. It's exactly the same ballot you would fill out at the polls, and it will be counted exactly the same way, too. It will be fed into a scanner at the County Government Center in front of witnesses. There's also been some concern that it may be hard to get poll workers this year, and some voting places may be consolidated. So voting by mail is a great way to vote quickly and easily. Please just go to votespa.com and start the process now. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivia. I like that. Vote spa. That's a nice.
Yes. That was Philadelphia who said that to me first, but I think it's wonderful.
It seems to work. I think one of the things that's really important that you mentioned was that we're probably going to have difficulty finding poll workers. I mean, we saw that in the primary election that happened in Wisconsin, where in some places, I think it was 18 polling places got condensed into 5.
Right. The other thing is that we found that an awful lot of people who thought they had to use the ballot marking device or something that would be more so they'd have some help, you could get all this with the mail-in. As long as you can scratch in the square, in the rectangle, I should say, not the square, as long as you can mark that off with a pen, it can be read by any scanner. And several people have told me when I was doing demos on how to use the ballot marking device machine, they said, but it's easier to do it the other way. And I said, yes, you don't have to do it. I just thought because they were in a wheelchair or something that they'd want to do it the other way. But it turns out that many, it's really only those that are sight impaired. But somebody told me he was sight impaired, that they have a special magnifying glass at home. So I really think we ought to reach out to all those people we know that do have some health issues and about helping them be able to use mail-in as well.
Okay. We're just still screening the questions, trying to get them organized. So I think in the meantime, let's pop over to Catherine Biddle from the Delaware County Library System. Catherine?
Hi, how are you?
Thank you for joining us today.
Since I'm following Olivia, I'd just like to interject that the public libraries in Delaware County do have the applications for the mail-in ballots. So hopefully, once we reopen, people will be able to stop by their local library and pick up a ballot there if they don't want to access it online. Okay, that was my little spiel for voting. So first, I want to say thanks for inviting me to join the conversation. We're celebrating National Library Week, so I'm happy to talk about public libraries. Although our buildings are closed, our libraries are available 24/7 online to all of our residents. The resources I'm going to talk about this afternoon can be found on our website, which is www.delcolibraries.org. However, to access some of those services, you will need a library card. And everyone's in luck. Right now, now we're promoting it. You can get a free library card from the convenience of your home. You can go to our website, and on the second slider, you can click Apply for a Library Card. And that'll give you a form to fill out, or you can email us at support@delcolibraries.org, and we'll respond with the information we need from you to issue you a library card. We usually do that within 24 hours. I'm going to talk about a lot of things today, I'm going to mention many things in this short period of time, but I would encourage you to visit our website and explore. There's so much information there that I wouldn't be able to even touch on it in this amount of time, so I would definitely point you in that direction. So the first thing I want to talk about on our site is our calendar of virtual events. Since we have closed our buildings, we've now started providing programs virtually. So there's a long list of things that we're offering, but I just want to highlight a few. We have book clubs for teens and adults. We have craft events for kids of all ages, plus for families. Cooking classes, yoga, quizzo and trivia events, and then we have story times for babies, toddlers, and preschoolers. Many of our story times are offered via Facebook Live, so if you're unable to participate in a live story time, we also have a Delco Library's YouTube channel. This channel hosts, last time I looked, there was about 150 YouTube videos and book choices that you could access and watch with your little ones at home. Next, I'm going to talk about our e-resources that we have. And this can be used for both schoolwork and entertainment. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you'll find all these services on our website under Explore e-resources tab. The first resource I want to talk about that I think is really important and students in grades kindergarten through college might find useful, and this is called Help Now. This is an online homework help resource. It's brought to you by a company called BrainFuse. It offers a comprehensive suite of online academic services designed to support many learning needs and styles. Some of the things that Help Now offers are between the hours of 2 p.m. and 11 p.m., it allows students to interact one-on-one with a live tutor. The subjects they offer are math, science, reading and writing, social studies. They cover the PSATs, the SATs, the ACT, AP, and other standardized tests. So the student would just go on, pick their topic, and they're matched up with a specialist in that field. Help Now also offers a 24-hour writing lab, and that's where students can submit their essays or other forms of writing, and they'll get constructive feedback within 24 hours. Another useful aspect of this site is you have a send a question module, and what that does is if a student is struggling with a particular problem or question, they submit their homework question, and they get expert guidance from these online tutors. Lastly, Help Now offers a collaboration tool, and it's called Meet. It's their version of Zoom. Students can go into these sessions, their private virtual study rooms where they can meet with their friends. And since it is through this subscription, you don't have the worries that you have with Zoom. Okay, so the next thing that our students might be interested in are research topics in science and humanities. We have subscriptions to, I'm going to say close to 100 databases, things like American, Ancient, Medieval History, Academic OneFile, which are peer-reviewed full-text articles. We have Bloom's Literary Reference, two science databases, almanacs, and encyclopedias. For those that are visual learners, we also have resources called BookFlix and TrueFlix. BookFlix is for our literary students, and TrueFlix is for the middle and high school students. The BookFlix uses videos and ebooks to focus on learning. Some of those, some of that site actually has interactive games where kids don't know they're learning, but they're learning in this fun environment. TrueFlix is for the older students where they have videos and ebooks focused on people, places, nature, history, and science. We also have another resource that's called Tumble Books, and this focuses on early literacy by providing electronic picture books for children to read or that can be read by them, and the books include animation, sound, music, and narration. Another thing is, I only have two more, so hang in there with me, guys. Age of Learning is another database that parents might find helpful. Age of Learning features research-based educational programs and includes thousands of digital learning activities that can help preschoolers, elementary, and middle school students keep learning while schools are closed. And last but not least, I would be remiss if I didn't tell you about all of the ebooks and audiobooks that we provide to our library card members. One of the most popular resources is OverDrive, and this provides access to thousands of current popular fiction and nonfiction audio and electronic books. So, in summary, thanks for letting me share just a small sample of everything Delaware County Libraries has to offer. Everything I've mentioned and a whole lot more can be found at our website, which once again is www.delcolibraries.org. And if you have specific questions or you need help, please, please reach out to us at support@delcolibraries.org and a librarian will get right back to you. So stay safe, everyone. Thanks.
Thank you, Catherine. And I'm a proud library card holder myself.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Now's a good time.
Why don't we go take a phone call? Let's. Can we go to Patty?
Hi. Hi. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you today? Staying safe?
I'm doing pretty good. I have two questions. First of all, as far as elections are concerned, I am judge of elections in my local district. And I've been for quite some time now. And my question has to do with the mail-in ballots. Are they going to be treated like an absentee ballot where they will be sent to the polling place for us to open and count and be given the opportunity for the voter to maybe contest it and come in and vote in person instead, like an absentee can be?
Sure. It's actually, it is changing, I know. I'm going to let Olivia handle the question. Olivia?
Okay. The ballots will stay in the courthouse. They will not be, in the government center. And they will not come to the polls, so that we will not be counting them at the polls. Those of us, I say we, the poll workers, counting them. But in the fall, there'll be a change, and people can bring in their ballot if they decide that they wanted to vote in person rather than using their mail-in. And then they'll be able to say, and that ballot, they call it spoiled, it will be marked in a way that it cannot be used, and then you'll be able to vote using a ballot at the polling place.
Okay,
but does that answer?
Similar to an absentee in a way. Okay.
Yes, it's going to be much more like an absentee. I think that's a good way of thinking of it. And they're saying they think they're going to need a larger room than where the county council normally meets. And they're talking about to find a room large enough so that they'll be able. They have three scanners now that they're going to be able to scan in ballots. But there'll still be observers from each party, and anybody can come and be there if they'd like to watch the ballot process counting take place.
The ones that would be mailed in instead of sending them back to the polling place. Okay.
That's right. Well,
nothing will go to the polling place,
so you'll be getting out of the polling place sooner.
You know? I'm usually pretty good at getting out of there quickly. I'm organized, so
well, good
I'm
for you.
That. Yeah, I try. I try.
I hope you get workers. That's what
my workers I have are my neighbors and friends, and they're good. They know what to do. They know their job.
That's great.
And we get it done. My other question had to do with unemployment. I am currently laid off from my job, and I am collecting unemployment. I got a letter from unemployment stating the amount that my weekly benefit would be, but when it was placed into my checking account, it was considerably less. And, of course, it's too crazy to call in. You can't get through to them because they're so overwhelmed. And I'm wondering, are they automatically taking taxes out of that?
Let's see. Go ahead, Sarah.
If it was the federal benefit, when you sign up for that piece, you have an option to have them withhold a 10% withholding to cover the federal taxes for that. But it sounds like you should follow up with our office, and we can maybe help you reconcile that issue.
Okay, when I first signed up, I didn't even know about the federal part that was going to be done, because I was laid off pretty early before that even started. So I don't think I checked off to have, to have taxes taken out, but it wasn't even a thought at the time. All right, so who should I follow up with?
You can call my office, and we'd be happy to help you.
That number is 610-544-6120. And we're retrieving messages, so you can just leave a message with a callback number or an email, and someone will follow up with you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Let's see. How about, can we go to Candy next?
Hi. Yes.
Hello.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. My question, and I kind of think she answered it. I wanted to know, with the voting, will there be a polling place to go if you wish to do that and not do the mail-in or online, or any other way we could do it? I'd like to go to the polling place, but obviously, if it's not going to be there, then you have to use the alternatives.
Right now, the way it's set up, there will be a place to go vote. Although We are encouraging mail-in ballots only because of the social distancing issues that you can get. You imagine you have to wait online to vote and you have to keep 6 feet between you and the person in front of you. The line can get long really mm-hmm. quickly. That's
okay.
But if I could add one thing, Tim, in this, they are talking about consolidating spaces. So if we don't have enough poll workers, and maybe, you know, you'd have two polling places in the same place, which may mean, mm-hmm. you know, but what they're counting on is the fact that because mail-in ballots is going to reduce the number somewhat, we shouldn't have the same lines that we saw in Wisconsin. At least that's the great
right.
hope. And but the idea is that there will be polling places in every community. It's just that you may need to look and see if yours got moved for some reason, because we can't vote in any of the senior centers, and you can't vote. So some of these places are going to have to move. But they will be moved to someplace else. The schools will be open. But I think that there were about 40 places that I know of that were told that they could not vote there, so they have to be moved.
Okay. Thanks very much for that. Right now I'd like to introduce Gene Kasner. Gene Kasner is from the Chester County Department of Health. And the Chester County Department of Health has basically adopted Delaware County during this crisis, and we're forever grateful to them for that. So, Gene?
Thank you, Senator. I like how you say that, adopted. That is with great fondness that we are assisting and, quite frankly, leveraging the wonderful resources already in Delaware County to kind of put this all together from a public health response. So I'm appreciative for what Delaware County already had in place that we can leverage. So just maybe give an update and maybe zero in on a couple finer details, and then obviously open it up to questions. As you know, the Health Operations Center here in Chester County, which is led by the Chester County Health Department, is working side by side with Delaware County's Emergency Operations Center and Chester County's Emergency Operations Center toward the same goal. So we are going hand in hand in trying to get the county healthy and ultimately open back to whatever our new normalcy might look like. We're on the health side of things. We continue to leverage all of the public health strategies we have at hand to get there. First and foremost is our surveillance and investigation. We continue with that on a day-to-day basis. In the health department, we have two teams of individuals. One team handles the general public's investigation of positive cases and provides all the guidance our general public needs in Delaware County. And then we have a whole separate team wholly dedicated to congregate care facilities. And these facilities are facilities such as long-term care homes or personal care homes, retirement communities, group homes, whether they're special need group homes or recovery group homes. To us, it doesn't matter if it's a congregate care facility. Once that facility is identified coronavirus within their population, whether it's the staff or those they are serving, then we have an assigned individual that works with them on a day-to-day basis. In the beginning, it is to get them enhanced and strengthening their protocol and procedures to remain safe and try to limit the spread of the coronavirus. And then we continue on with any other guidance and support we can provide, to include connecting staff and residents to wellness and mental health relief, food if it's needed, personal protection equipment, so PPE, and the like. So it's a really robust scope that we're trying to support at these facilities, and those teams are dedicated to that. We're also continuing to provide healthcare support to our healthcare system, such as our hospitals, both public and private. not only providing them guidance, but also ensuring they have the necessary equipment they need, whether that's respirators, PPE, food, whatever it is, to keep them up and running in a healthy way. We conduct weekly conference calls with our hospitals to keep them up to date and address their immediate questions. We also do this with our long-term care facility. So that's another group that we have weekly contact with as a group. And this is open to any congregate care, whether they have coronavirus currently in their facility or not. Again, we also provide the congregate care with the supplies they need to remain successful in keeping them, their staff, and their residents safe. We also provide them with the appropriate guidance on testing. When it comes to testing, there are two types of testing that we consistently get questions about and provide support for. So one is, I'm just going to generally call it diagnostic testing. This is kind of the swab that goes up the nose that tells individuals, yes, you have coronavirus at this time. This is the specimen, this type of test requires a specimen collection kit that is specific to coronavirus and, as you've heard, is in very high need for additional supplies. And this is across the country, and, you know, the impact here in Delaware County is no less. So those collection kits right now, because they are in short supply, still remain in use for the highest priority populations. The individuals still need a prescription from a healthcare provider. Those populations are residents of congregate care settings that are symptomatic, healthcare workers and first responders that are symptomatic, individuals within hospitals that are symptomatic and have no other cause for the symptoms. And we also include as the fourth priority individuals at risk for severe disease. So those are the higher, the older individuals who have chronically, other chronic underlying conditions, and we're testing, the result of the testing would actually change how we manage their care. So despite limitations in that testing, there are options for individuals to get tested. The first is if you are showing, regardless of your demographic, if you are showing signs and symptoms of coronavirus, and that would include the cough, fever, or difficulty in breathing, contact your doctor. They can assess you even over the phone and direct you to testing. And there are testing options throughout the county, predominantly supported by our healthcare system, and they have agreed to take individuals that are not a part of their health system. So we're very thankful for that. If an individual does not have a doctor, they can call the Chester County Health Department at 610-344-6225, and we can connect individuals who don't have a doctor to a clinician over the phone who will do that assessment, write the prescription, and then direct the residents to appropriate testing. While we want to do mass testing, the supplies are not there, but for individuals who are showing signs and symptoms, there is an avenue to be tested, and we really need to make sure people know that and get that word out, so I appreciate the opportunity today to share that. The other type of testing is antibody testing, and you may have heard about it. That kind of testing, we are still waiting to hear if we have met all the regulatory requirements to conduct that testing. That testing involves a finger prick, and blood is put on a medium that within about 15 minutes you can tell if someone has built up antibodies for the coronavirus. It is not a diagnostic testing. It doesn't diagnose an individual. What it does is gives us a better view of whether an individual has had coronavirus and therefore has built up antibodies and has a level of immunity, getting it again. We do not know how long that immunity lasts or how strong that immunity is. Or if an individual is currently with the virus and still working through it, even if they don't have symptoms, or an individual has never had the virus because they don't have any antibodies. The value of this kind of test allows information to our decision makers to help support reopening the county. So any of these tests are of value, they just are used differently. And once we have approval to use the antibody testing, we will certainly get that word out and tell individuals where they can get tested, again, at no cost to them, to ensure we have good representation across the county. The other things we're working on are keeping our data up to date. As you know, we work very hard to collect the data, validate the data, and communicate it as quickly and accurately as possible. As much as everybody's day has been fluid in this pandemic, the data is equally fluid. There are a lot of contributors to the data, to include hospitals and laboratories and medical examiners, my staff, other physicians. We do as best as we can to reconcile that data. We know our communities throughout both counties are watching the data and using it on a daily basis. So I appreciate everyone's patience as we've seen, you know, some hiccups in the data, and that some of those hiccups come from just validating that data is as accurate as possible. Hopefully everybody has seen the new data that has been put out for both counties regarding data around our long-term care and personal care homes. It is data that we had been cleaning for a while, and we are comfortable enough with it to put it out there. We hope to do the same for data related to the deaths in the counties, and then additionally try to get day-to-day data as opposed to just aggregate data. So continue to go to the website. It is chesco.org/coronavirus. And continue to use that data and watch it as we continue to enhance it. That data, along with everyone's diligence around social distancing, wearing of masks wherever we go, washing of hands, and watching our own signs and symptoms, will get us open. It may take some time, but we will get there. So, Senator, I appreciate the time and the invitation to join you on this important call.
Jean, it's always a pleasure to have you. Just to be clear, I want to make sure people understand that in order to get to the kind of information around Delaware County, you do have to go to the Chester County Health Department website. And on there, you'll see the maps for both Chester County and for Delaware County. Isn't that's right, Jean?
That is absolutely accurate. If you do go to Delaware counties, they do have a button that can get you straight over to Chester counties. And it was just so we could just funnel everybody to one place and didn't have to maintain two different systems. So that is correct.
Wonderful. Listen, we have a lot of questions. We're going to try to get to as many as we can. So I think right now we're going to go to Bob from Upper Providence.
Hello. Thank you. Two of my questions were just answered about whether there'd be data available for long-term care facilities and also day-to-day new case data. So I think that will be great when that's available. I am initially wondering, is that going to be on the same map that's already there, or is that in a different location? I know it's a bit of a crowded map so far.
It is crowded, yeah. So the long-term care data is already out there. If you look below the buttons for the data maps, there is a long button that says long-term care facility data. If you click that, it opens just a one-page summary. So that's there, and it has been there for about a week. For the day-to-day counts, we hope to replace the trend line on the current map dashboard at the bottom and use that space to display the day-to-day. Right now, it's just displaying an accumulative trend. We want it to change to a day-to-day trend. So we may just reuse that space and get rid of the old graph there.
Yeah, I think that was is great. As a plug, I asked a question similar to this about a few days ago, and somebody called me back just today with some information, and I was suggesting that, and I appreciate the responsiveness of your people. The one other piece of information that you haven't mentioned yet that would be interesting would be within our either the townships or the county on a hospital bed availability, maybe death rates, but which hospitals are at what level of capacity might enter into somebody's decision about where to go?
So great question. While we monitor that data every day, it is not the health department data. So I will put that recommendation in the hands of the organizations that manage that data. I can't release it on their behalf, but I will make that request for you.
Okay, thank you very much for those questions. How about let's go to Ann.
Hi, thank you so much to the Chester County Department of Health for filling in for us. I can't tell you how appreciative I am of you doing that. I'm calling because I've been looking at the Pennsylvania Department of Health data, and for today it showed that 90 out of Delaware County's 129 deaths were from long-term care facilities. And that means that close to 70% of the deaths in our county are from these long-term care facilities. I also know people who work in facilities where the infection is rampant, and there's not been any testing of asymptomatic staff or asymptomatic residents. And I think it's really hard to get on top of putting the pandemic down in these facilities without that kind of help. What's being done to try to address this horrific death rate in our long-term care facilities in our county?
This is one of the most difficult situations to be in because you are correct. We should be testing. However, because of the nature of congregate care, because we are up against a shortage of testing kits, and because of the nature of this virus, it doesn't always benefit us. And this is where it starts to get complicated. If you are asymptomatic, if we do a specimen collection and test you today, it does not mean that tomorrow you will not have the disease or the virus. Because we are in community spread, we are operating as if everybody has exposure. When you have that model within a congregate care facility, it's magnified because there's physical walls. It's not like us out in the general public, it's physical walls. So we could go in and test, even if we had all the supplies we needed. But those tests do not give us enough information in a congregate care setting because an individual, whether it's a resident or a staff member, could change and become symptomatic without even showing symptoms tomorrow, and we would miss it. So it's a very elusive virus. And it's very mean in these congregate care settings because it doesn't buy us enough information to change how we would manage them. So what we do as an investigation team is we help that facility identify, is there an area in the physical facility that can be dedicated to ill individuals and get that underway. I have to be honest with you, there's facilities that don't have that ability. And if you can imagine relocating an individual, it's essentially relocating their home, all of their personal belongings, because that can be very disruptive if we don't do all of that. So there are some facilities who are forced to use a shelter-in-place model because they cannot move people. It's difficult to accept. It's difficult to be on the outside, particularly if our loved ones are in it. It's just where we are at this particular time. We do have opportunities to get the antibody testing into facilities if their facility approves the use of it. We can get it to them, or if we do get through all the regulatory requirements, then they don't even have to wait for their facility to approve it. From a legal standpoint, they can go ahead and start using it. That's valuable because then we'll know which staff have already had it and therefore can work with the sick a little bit more freely and basically reduce a little bit of their stress. They still have to wear all the PPE. They still have to wash their hands. So there's not much that changes in a congregate care setting having that information because we still have to operate as if everybody can be exposed the next day. I know it's hard to hear.
Jean, thanks for that that answer. It is a very difficult situation we find ourselves. And thank you, Ann, for that call. Let's go to Dave in Folsom right now.
Hi, Senator Kearney. How are you doing?
Very well. How are you doing today?
Very good. I had the pleasure of meeting you a few years ago. You knocked on my door, and I appreciated that. Wanted to ask a couple questions here. So we've never done this before as a society, shutting down absolutely everything, basically, except for grocery. The models have been proven to be wrong by an astronomical margin. The latest data indicates that the infection is actually much more widespread than ever before, and this was done in Massachusetts, it was done in California, and I'm sure the same would hold true here. We were given the reason of doing this to flatten the curve so the hospitals wouldn't be overwhelmed. You haven't even gotten close to that, and now we're seeing the shutdowns are going to end up destroying more lives and killing more people than the virus actually will. So why are we continuing to do this?
Well, it's a tough question. I think we're going to. I think Jean can handle the flatten the curve piece of this probably better than I can.
Yeah, so I'll handle the health side because you're absolutely on target. There's a lot of other trickle down impacts, economic, business, personal, emotional, mental. So I will tell you that the social distancing, the less moving of people really has helped. And we know it's helped because we see in Delaware County and in Chester County, we see a decrease in 911 calls. We see hospitals, while they are overwhelmed with the coronavirus, they don't also have to maintain all of their other services. We see the public health measures taking effect. Now, unfortunately, the public health measures aren't like a pill or an injection where you see it in 24 hours. It takes time. So we have pockets of evidence that it is working and the shutdown has benefited. But I completely understand that it starts to take its toll and it will continue. Which is why we're trying to push as aggressively as we can to increase access to testing to inform where are we in terms of herd immunity, impact on number of cases to get the county back up and running.
Thanks, Jean. It is incredibly complicated. The worst thing we want to do is try to loosen up the restrictions we have too early and really see spikes that will be out of control. But I think there's an awful lot of people working on this, trying to figure out the safest way to maintain our health and also get us all back to work again. Let's go. We got another David, this one from Swarthmore. We can go to his question.
Yes, thank you very much for taking this call. I am desperately searching for a mask. Where can I buy one?
Oh boy, that'd be the million-dollar question. I honestly can't say in the local area that you are. However, what I would do is go to Delaware County's website, because I believe they have an information on where you can get a donated mask through a foundation that's trying to manage all of the county's material donations for the public. The other is, don't hesitate to use a bandana. Don't hesitate to use a scarf. It doesn't take much fancy work. You don't have to be a seamstress to make your own mask. And I personally am using a fabric one that I can wash each night. Even if I wash it by hand, it's very sufficient. It's about keeping the germs to yourself more than anything. So if you can't find one, a bandana, a piece of material, as long as it's cotton, it works very well.
I know there are lots of local organizations that are organizing those kinds of people who are making the masks. People are actually talented seamstresses, unlike me, where I hand-sewed my own mask, and it's not too bad, but it's not as good a quality as maybe a lot of them, but it works, and I do wear it every time I'm out. Okay, how about a social distancing question, Jean? Let's go to Angela in Upper Darby.
Hi, Angela.
Angela, are you there? Hello, Angela? Okay. Well, Angela's question was about having her adult daughters have their children, whether it's time that they can actually start to get the kids together again yet, because they've been doing social distancing till now.
Boy, I'll tell you, Senator, I have to be the bearer of bad news. Again, no, we don't want that. Again, I know it's hard. My kids, they don't leave the property. They're afraid to even leave the porch because they know I'll be after them. We can't have the kids getting together yet. What we've seen is in the young, they may be the strongest in this epidemic, but that doesn't mean they cannot carry it and bring it back to those who are at higher risk. So we really do want to not get into the gatherings among our youth or any age, quite frankly, and we need to stick with our social distancing for now.
Okay, Jean, thanks very much for that. I think we have time for one more call for you. Why don't we go to Tom in Newtown Square?
Hello.
Hi, how are you today?
Thanks for taking my call, but I'm going to need some help pronouncing the medication that Dr. Trump is pushing. That's not approved by the FDA. I want to know, why are they giving it to the veterans? And if I had to go to the hospital, would they try to force it on me? I can't pronounce the name of the pill. You're going to need help. Can you help me out?
That's okay. I don't try to pronounce it either.
No, I can't. I had it. Now I lost it. I've been waiting for you to get online. But it's a concern that I would not want. I'm living by myself now. I just buried my wife. So I wouldn't want to go to the hospital and they'll say, here, take this pill, knowing that it's not approved by the FDA, and I have a heart issue, so it could hurt that. I'm 70-some years old. So where does Chester County Health Department stand on that?
So first let me express my condolences for the loss of your wife.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. So yeah. Chester County Health Department, we are not recommending the use of that drug for anyone. There are individuals who need that drug for other reasons, so we don't want to start to take it from a population that has already depended on it and use it in coronavirus cases or non-cases without it being formally approved. So we do not advocate for that. Now, that doesn't mean a hospital may not use it, but I would recommend to the best of your ability, if you were in that situation, make it very clear that you do not wish to take that medication, or maybe even have a written note signed by yourself that is on your person should you not be able to communicate that for your own personal well-being.
Dean, thank you very much. And thank you very much for your time today. I know how busy you are. And we're going to switch gears a little bit. Oh, but actually, before we switch gears, David from Swarthmore, who asked about masks before, someone called in to say that the Swarthmore Time Bank actually has masks available that people are donating. So that's an easy one to find in this part of Delaware County. Okay, so now I'd like to introduce Sarah McCullough, who's my chief of staff, and she and Dawn Martin, who's my director of constituent services, are going to talk about unemployment issues.
Great, thanks, Senator. Good afternoon, everyone. Dawn and I are on Senator Carney's team, and we'll give a general overview of the newly expanded unemployment compensation, or UC, benefits, as well as answer some sample questions from callers. All of the information, including websites and telephone numbers referenced, are on the UC website, as well as Senator Carney's website, which is Senator Carney, KEARNEY.com. That's SenatorCarney.com. You don't have to take notes during this presentation, but if that's your preference, now's the time to grab your pencils. I will generally stay away from referencing UC program start dates, eligibility dates, and end dates because there are so many of them. They're all different and unique to your circumstances, and they're all available on the UC website. I'll be using the words unemployment compensation and the letters UC interchangeably. We'll review basic UC benefits as well as changes to or expansion of benefits through the Federal CARES Act. All of the unemployment benefit information can be found at www.uc.pa.gov. www.uc.pa.gov. On that site, you can apply for general UC, where it says file an initial claim, as well as the federal pandemic unemployment compensation, which adds the additional $600 per week to your UC benefit. If you are not eligible for traditional unemployment compensation, or UC, you may be eligible for pandemic unemployment assistance, or PUA, which is also on the UC site under File for PUA. This program expands UC eligibility to include people who have traditionally been ineligible, like folks who are self-employed, those who have gig work, or who have limited work histories. Finally, through the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation, or PEUC, there is an additional 13 weeks of benefit coverage for a total of 39 weeks. This is the provision that helps people who have already exhausted their UC for this benefit year. We'll also review where to apply for UC and where to find help with your claims. Lastly, we know this process is hard and we're here to help. You're not alone. Filing for UC and or PUA, is challenging and requires patience. Since March 16th, the Department of Labor and Industry has received 1.6 million new unemployment compensation claims in a period of 6 weeks. Since the launch of PUA, that program that makes folks previously ineligible now eligible, the UC site has received an additional 50,000 plus applications. So let's get to the changes. For unemployment compensation, the waiting week, work search, work registration requirements have all been suspended. Previously, people filing for unemployment compensation were not eligible during their first week of unemployment. It was also known as the waiting week. This waiting week has been suspended, so you can file and are eligible for benefits the first week that you're unemployed or have hours reduction. You are also not required to prove you've applied or searched for a new job to maintain your UC benefits. You're no longer required to register at the PA CareerLink site during this time. Eligibility for these new unemployment benefits needs to be COVID-19 related. Examples include your employer temporarily closed or went out of business because of COVID-19, your employer reduced hours because of COVID-19, you've been told not to work because your employer feels they might get or spread COVID-19, or you've been told to quarantine or self-isolate, or you're not working because of a response to a government-recommended mitigation effort. Another expanded federal benefit is the Federal Pandemic Unemployment Compensation, or FPUC. This program provides eligible individuals with $600 per week in addition to the weekly UC benefit amount they receive. You can only receive benefits if you have been home for COVID-19-related reasons and are no longer working through no fault of your own. You must be able and available to work. This additional $600 payment does not come in your regular UC biweekly payment. It's paid the week after, in biweekly installments. So both UC and federal pandemic UC are paid biweekly, but on alternating weeks. Federal pandemic UC is taxable. When you apply for this benefit, you'll be asked if you want to have 10% of it held to cover federal income taxes related to that benefit. Also through the CARES Act is Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, or PUA. This is the provision I mentioned earlier that makes folks eligible for unemployment compensation who otherwise would have been ineligible. So if you're self-employed, if you're working part-time, or if you lack sufficient work history, you may be eligible for PUA. To be covered under PUA, you must self-certify that you're otherwise able and available to work and that you're unemployed, partially unemployed, or unable to work due to COVID-19-related reasons. Other examples of individuals covered by this program include sole proprietors, farmers, independent contractors, and corporate officers. This CARES Act program was recently launched, so we encourage folks to check the UC site for the most up-to-date information and fixes. And finally, there is the Federal Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation, or PEUC. This benefit allows states to pay up to 13 weeks of benefits to individuals in a few different circumstances, but most importantly, for those who have exhausted their unemployment compensation in the current benefit year. So, how and where do I apply? Applications can be filed beginning with the first week you're impacted or have reduced hours, anytime on the UC website. Again, that's www.uc.pa.gov. After you've completed the application, if UC needs additional information, they'll reach out to you directly. If you don't have access to the internet, you can call and apply over the phone Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. That number is 888-313-7284. That's 888-313-7284. But again, our team would strongly encourage you try to find access to the internet, as call volume during this time is very high and it's hard to get through on this number. If you're in doubt about whether you're eligible, apply. Apply on the UC site under File an Initial Claim and File for PUA. Both of those options are listed on the home page. Once your claim has been received, within about 2 weeks, although we know there are exceptions, you should receive a claim confirmation letter, which includes a personal identification number or PIN number, a bank Relia card, which is a debit card and their preferred default method of payment, an unemployment compensation handbook, and a notice of final determination. One important tip is if you have a question about a benefit payment and you've received a debit card, you should check the balance on the debit card. If you've checked the debit card and the payment has not been received there, then you should check your bank account for a direct deposit. When and where benefits are paid can be monitored on the UC website through benefit payment history. Now I'm going to give you two numbers, one for debit card issues and one for direct deposit issues. If you're having an issue with your debit card, that number is for the U.S. Bank Relia card, and it is 888-233-5916. That's 888-233-5916. And if you have a direct deposit issue, the number to the UC Treasury is 877-869-1956. Again, that's 877-869-1956. You can also go on to the UC site and have a live chat to get some of your questions answered. That's available Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. You can also send an email to uchelp@pa.gov, but our team would recommend trying the live chat as response time for emails can be up to 16 days. You can also contact their new virtual assistant to get answers to general UC questions, and that number is 877-978-1295. That's 877-978-1295. Now we're going to open it up for questions. I want to provide our office number as well, because we're happy to help folks. That number is 610-544-6120. And it can also be found on Senator Carney's website. We are retrieving messages regularly, so please leave a message with a contact number and we'll get back to you. So, Senator, can we take a few questions?
Thank you, Sarah. Let's go to Christine.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Christine. How are you?
Fine. How are you? Thank you for taking my question.
Of course.
I work 37 hours a week, and I'm losing 13 hours a week, or 72 a month, due to the virus. But I get a small civil service pension. Am I eligible for unemployment compensation for the loss of 13 hours a week?
So I can answer that question. As Sarah had mentioned, you were always encouraged to apply for the benefit.
Uh-huh.
And if you have a part-time job or any type of job and your hours have been reduced, then by all means, go on and apply. So
okay.
If you are eligible, sure.
Getting a small pension wouldn't mean I'm uneligible.
No, it will not. If you're paying into unemployment and your hours have been reduced, you can still receive benefits.
Can you tell me where the office is located? Because I've called for 3 weeks and just get a busy signal all day long.
The office, you would have to go online where we have the phone number.
Okay.
You can call. Are you able to go online?
No, I don't have a computer.
Okay. There is a phone number you can call. And when you do that, it could be a little bit of time because it's taking a long time. They have so many calls.
Yes.
So that number is...
Yeah, you just have to keep trying. It's frustrating, but it is retroactive.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So the number is 888-313-7284. And the hours are from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Okay. All right. Thank you for helping me.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Christine. Squeeze and run real quick. Let's go to Rita. Rita, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi.
Hi.
How
thanks for taking
you?
My call. Yeah, so I did exhaust my benefits the beginning of April, and I heard, I forget the woman's name that just spoke, she said that, I think I heard her say that we could just go online and apply. But on the website, I'm looking at it now, and it says that the system is not available yet and that we will receive a notice with instructions on how to apply. But it's been saying that since the beginning of April. So what do I do? Do I just apply or do I wait?
You've exhausted your benefits. Have you tried to reapply and open a new claim yet?
I have not.
Okay. You may be eligible to open a whole new claim. So that's what you should do first.
Okay.
Yep. And if you're eligible, they will let you know. And then if not, then that's when you will be eligible for the additional 13 weeks.
Okay. So go in and try to open a new claim first. And if that doesn't work,
correct,
then I would be eligible for the additional 13 weeks.
Correct.
Okay. Okay.
All right, Rita, good luck. Okay, This hour went really fast. Thank you all for participating in the telephone town hall discussion today. All those who listened in and all those who asked questions, it's been a really good discussion. I think we learned an awful lot. A special thank you to my my guests, Jean Kasner, Olivia Thorne, and Catherine Biddle, as well as Sarah and Dawn from my office. If you did not get a chance to ask your question, you can remain on the line and you'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we'll get back to you. If you are in the queue and had your question there, then we will do our best to get back to you in the next week with answers to your questions. Thank you again for your participation. Any additional questions or concerns, please call our office at 610-544-6120 or visit my website at senatorcarney.com. I want you all to stay safe, wash your hands, stay home, and if you go out, wear a mask. Everyone be good. Have a good evening. Thank you very much for participating.
Thank you, Senator.